Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic, We Are So Possessive. He joins us weekly, the films Megan, Rye Lane, and Blaze.
Well, we have three movies this week with nice, concise titles. And I'll start with the first one, which has the oddest title of the bunch, Megan, except the E in Megan is the numeral 3. And that sounds a little bit maybe sort of science fiction-y. And this is sort of a little bit of a science fiction-y movie. It's also a horror movie. And of course, it's very much like so many movies there have been over the years about sinister dolls, or dolls that are not really dolls, or dolls that are partly human, or something like that, all the way from the Chucky movies to Spielberg's very fine movie, AI, Artificial Intelligence. Anyway, that is what sort of Megan is, and it does its very best to be horrifying. It is directed by Gerard Johnstone, and it stars Allison Williams as Gemma, a young woman who very, very early in the film becomes the guardian of a little girl named Katie, played by Violet McGraw. A very, very good performance, by the way, in a movie that generally is, I am afraid, not very well acted. Gemma has never taken care of a young child before. She isn't always 100% sure what to do. There's a social worker who's sort of overseeing the situation and is very skeptical about whether Gemma is really up to this. One of the things that Gemma is doing aside from looking after Katie is working on, she works for a big, huge, futuristic sort of toy company called Funky, and she is working on the prototype for a new toy, which will be a fabulous doll that will be able to have, it has artificial intelligence, that's a big theme of the movie, and that will be every child's not only toy, but companion and helper and all of this. So that is what Gemma is working on. And of course, she gets this doll kind of into prototype form, and Katie is right there, a little girl. And so she bonds with the doll in a very literal way. There's a sort of a little bonding thing that they have to do. And from then on, Katie will be the operator of the doll, whose name, of course, is Megan. And things move on from there. It soon turns out that Megan may have a mind of her own. Megan looks like a little girl, but yeah, played by Amy Donald, I have to say they do a nice job of making her look somewhat like a little girl and somewhat like an artificial creature or an android or something along those lines. So we have Gemma looking after Katie and working on this doll, which is not really quite into final form yet. And we have the little doll, Megan, who turns out to be have a mind of her own and be very, very sinister and maybe violent and maybe really evil and dangerous. So we all know how this sort of movie goes. The evil and the dangerousness of Megan grows more and more pronounced as the movie goes along and various kinds of horrific situations ensue. I really think that Megan is quite a bad movie. It's gotten some very good reviews from a lot of people. And I think one of the reasons why some people are really deciding it's really a worthwhile film is because of this artificial intelligence theme. Yes, there's a lot of anxiety today, and some of it among quite knowledgeable scientists that our artificial intelligence tools may get out of control, may start to take on their own agendas, may not decide to serve the human beings who have created them, but may decide to dominate the human beings that have created them, or may simply not understand what human beings want and need and go off on their own agendas and cause all kinds of chaos and maybe end the human race. So yeah, all of that sort of theme is there in Megan, sort of way below the surface. But on the surface, Megan is a horror movie, and it is not a very good horror movie. And above all, oh, the acting in it, I found just so lumpy. The dialogue is poorly written, but some of it could be passable if the acting were any good. But it has a pretty big cast. There's Ronnie Cheng playing this the boss of the toy company, who is trying to get this doll ready for presentation to the board and all of that. And that's another little subplot that's going on in the movie. And, oh, various other people. But my gosh, everybody acts as if they had just read their dialogue for the first time. And it just is never, never very persuasive. The horror is usually not very persuasive. Of course, near the end of the film, we get into a big burst of horrors horrors and terrors that happen and a lot of violence and all of that, apparently somewhat edited down from what the director had originally intended. But I just did not find it persuasive. So Megan, movie that's getting a lot of good reviews. It has a real lineage. It plugs into this very popular theme over the years of the dangerous toy, the dangerous doll. But my gosh, I found this to be just very flat. And by the time it was over, I was really glad it was over. So I can't recommend Megan unless you really are a completist for this kind of movie. Our next film today is very, very different, Rye Lane. This is a brand new movie, and it is a little bit different. It's basically a rom-com, but it's a rom-com that's different in a few ways, at least different from most of the stuff that comes our ways. It's a British film directed by Rainn Alan Miller, but it's also very much a black film. The characters, pretty much all of them, are black people, and they are reasonably charming characters. I certainly didn't find Rye Lane to be a major film in any way, but I found it to be a likable film in a whole lot of ways. So what we have here is in this neighborhood of London, which is known as Rye Lane, named after a street there, we meet a couple of young people, and they have just gone through bad breakups. One of them, the boy, whose name is Dom, has just broken up after a 6-year relationship with his girlfriend, and he found out that she's been cheating on him with his best friend. So he is very, very, very unhappy. And we discover that in the very first sequence of the movie. And by the way, I found the very opening scene of Rye Lane to be the best in the whole film. And of all things, it's an overhead shot where the camera travels down overhead a bunch of toilet stalls in a restroom, and we see what's going on in each one of them. Yeah, it's a little bit yucky, but each one has a totally different little drama being played out. And in one of them, we see this poor boy, one of our main characters in the movie, and he is just Dom, and he is just crying and wailing and weeping and moaning, so we feel very sorry for him. And then a little bit later on, we meet Yas, the young woman who is going to be the other main character of the movie. And she has just come out of a fairly short-term relationship, but her breakup was also a very unhappy one. And she is ready to go on to whatever the next big thing is going to be in her life. Dom appears stuck in the relationship of 6 years that just broke up. But yes, she's ready to move on. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she's also a young woman on the go. She wants to be a costume designer, and she's working on trying to somehow get a toehold on that industry and start doing that for movies. So we have these two attractive and appealing young people, and they have this cute meet very early in the film, and then we go on and we see them through the whole rest of the movie, which takes place over the course of one day. And the movie, by the way, is well under an hour and a half long, which is a refreshing change from some of the exceedingly long movies, such as the new Avatar movie. It's nice to find a movie that has this is less than a half as long as the Avatar movie, maybe about a third as long, and oh, that is very, very nice. Anyway, the action takes place over one day, and these two people wander around, and little by little, they get to know each other, they separate, then they come together again, and oh yeah, it's you, yeah, how are you? And the movie sort of goes on from there. So it is very much a rom-com, and very much a traditional, kind of ordinary rom-com, but it's very spirited. It has a very lively tone to it. The main characters are likable. We meet a whole lot of interesting and usually fairly appealing secondary characters along the way. But above all, the movie just has a colorful look. It's been compared to the work of Wes Anderson, a very popular filmmaker nowadays. But I think a big difference is that for me, Wes Anderson's movies usually have absolutely no sense of spontaneity. They just tend to be always very frozen, and everything seems calculated and put together in this sort of meticulous, careful way. In Rye Lane, which again, it's not a major film, at least there's a sense of people just having fun, the filmmakers as well as the characters, and there's a sense of spur-of-the-momentness to it. I'm sure everything was carefully planned and rehearsed, but at least we have a feeling of moment-by-moment inventiveness going on, and that's also a very nice thing to encounter, and that's also very different from so many of today's movies, which are big and ambitious and have all of these, they just seem so planned out, so storyboarded. I think that this movie has a sense of spontaneity and off-the-cuff energy, which I really, really did like. So again, I got to say one more time, Rye Lane is certainly not a major film, but it's just a likable film, and it's about a whole lot of really likable black characters sort of tootling around their neighborhood of London and coming together and separating. A little bit, also the movie's been compared with the Before movies by Richard Linklater. It has a little bit in common with those, but I think, again, it's livelier and more fun. So I had a nice time watching Rye Lane. I won't be remembering it probably for a very long time. Again, it's the sort of thing that sort of comes and goes in your mind, but I really did have a nice time watching it while it was actually on the screen. And our final movie for today, which is called Blaze, B-L-A-Z-E, and it is about a little girl named Blaze, another little girl movie, and this one is so much better than Megan, in my opinion. A really, really interesting movie. It was made by Del Catherine Barton, who is usually, most of the time, a painter. And now Barton has made this movie, and oh, it is a very, very visual movie. And in fact, its visual qualities are really the most striking thing about it, more striking than the story. Now, I have to say right at the get-go here that Blaze begins with a really brutal scene of rape, a rape that results in a death. So it's really a rape and murder that takes place at the very, very outset of the movie. So if you're not prepared for that, either skip this movie altogether or skip the first 5 or 10 minutes, because that's what we see. This takes place all of a sudden in a public place, and it is witnessed by this little girl named Blaze, who is played, by the way, in a remarkable performance by Julia Savage, who is really, really terrific. So Julia Savage, this little girl, she's about 11 years old, witnesses this horrifying act, and not surprisingly, she is traumatized by it. And her PTSD lasts through a whole good part of the movie. This is not a movie all about somebody who suddenly goes catatonic and can't move or speak or anything like that. She actually, you know, comes back to herself fairly quickly in a lot of ways, but definitely the after effects of this horrible thing that she has witnessed are very much with her. Fortunately, she has a really nice father, and he does his best to help her and bring her out and comfort her and spend time with her. She only has the father. Her mother is, as the father puts it, not in the picture. Mother and father are no longer together. But he's a good guy, and he really does his very best to just treat her as nurture her as well as he can after this horrible event. So that's fortunate. Very unfortunate thing is that the rapist murderer has been caught. And they want Blaze to testify in the trial because she is the only witness to this thing that happened. And that, of course, is going to be a very, very difficult thing for a little girl. She's 11 and then she turns 12 during the movie. Very, very difficult thing for her to do. And the father is trying to protect her from having to do this. At the same time, the father thinks maybe she really ought to do this. This man did this horrific, horrifying thing and really has got to be brought to justice. And at the same time that he's trying to nurture and protect and comfort Blaze and save her from the horrible traumatic after effects of what she's witnessed, he is also encouraging her, if she possibly can, to please try to participate in these court proceedings, which might bring this guy to justice. Now, all of this is story material that I'm describing, but again, what really distinguishes this film is its fabulous visuals, and they come primarily from the fantasies of Blaze herself. She is a little girl with a teeming, huge, productive imagination, and she has in that imagination a make-believe dragon and all kinds of other creatures and objects and places that she can visit in her imagination, in her daydreams. And she has been so traumatized by what she has witnessed that she retreats to her imagination really, really often. And in fact, her imaginary world and the real world in which she lives overlap very much. Now, this is, again, not a film about somebody who can't tell fantasy from reality and is sort of struggling with that and is awash and lost and at sea in this confusion. No, she seems to know what her fantasies are and what the reality is, but she retreats to the world of her imagination and her fantasies really, really often, and they are the most vivid and living part of the movie. So we have a film that on the one hand has very, very gritty and raw and sometimes really scary and unpleasant realities, and also these marvelous, hugely colorful fantasies of Blaze, which we see visualized all over the screen by a filmmaker who is also a painter and has a very, very strong visual sense and really knows how to make this stuff alive on the screen. So Blaze is a kind of a mixed movie. Sometimes it's in a real everyday world of what's going on with this little girl's very, very difficult life situation, very difficult psychological situation. One of the least convincing parts of the film, I think, are the therapists whom she sees from time to time during this story. They are not particularly well played, and they're obviously not particularly good therapists, and they don't really do any good. But we also have the marvelous fantasy life of Blaze, which just flows across the screen and captures our attention. In my opinion, the fantasy sequences in Blaze are so much more interesting and alive and compelling than almost anything in the new Avatar movie, that if you want to choose a fantasy to see one of these days, run out and see Blaze. It's a much more interesting movie. I'll repeat once more, it's a disturbing movie at parts, especially at the very beginning, but it's a very, very living, fantastical movie that really makes its fantasies live and breathe. I had a good time watching Blaze, and I think a lot of other people will too. So that is my somewhat fantastical story this week.
Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Megan, Rylane, and Blaze.